This episode is brought to you by Maya Angelou and her legendary quote, "People will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel."
Welcome to the Stefan Dyer Podcast, my people.
My people, ¿cómo están, damas y caballeros? Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of the Stefan Dyer Podcast, where we welcome people with remarkable stories for amazingly vulnerable conversations. Today, I have the honor, the pleasure of welcoming the unbreakable, the unmistakable, the highly capable, Carlos Chalico, one of the legends in the Latin American community in Toronto, partner in cybersecurity at EY with over 24 years of experience in the industry, but also one of the kindest people I know, one of the most social, charismatic, good-hearted people that I know. I met Carlos probably 2-3 years ago before the pandemic. And it was like instant connection. I want to be friends with this guy. He is the head of the Mexican community here. He's the head of everything good that happens here. And I'm incredibly happy to have him here. We're going to talk about cybersecurity. We're going to talk about the Latin community. We're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about newcomers, about how to overcome depression in Canada, how to get meaningful jobs, and in general, how to really succeed as a Latino Canadian in Canada. I'm very excited. If you love this episode, don't be shy. Subscribe, follow us on Instagram, Carlos Chalico, Stefan Dyer. Even better, on LinkedIn, Carlos Chalico, Stefan Dyer. Share the episode with one person that you love. And most importantly, comment, because that's how people know about this episode, let people know, and about our shows. I always have like a 15-second curtain here about our shows. So basically, I'm going to be performing in Toronto, Montreal this December, Costa Rica in January, and then February 24, 2024. And that's 2-24-24, my first ever English comedy special in Toronto. You cannot miss it. Tickets at stefandyer.com and malpensando.com/tickets.
Breaking news, everybody. Breaking news. Before we dive into the episode, we have a new podcast sponsor. I'm recording this from Costa Rica in the scorching heat. That's why you see me in a different shirt than when we recorded the episode, but I'm just too excited. I can't let this opportunity go. And this is connected to arguably the lowest point in my career. So let me share this little personal story. It'll take 1 minute before we jump into the episode. It's late 2017. I just quit my bank job in Toronto, and to be honest, was struggling with comedy. On the other hand, I had just like literally proposed to my girlfriend, now wife, and we decided to buy an apartment because, hey, we're spending the rest of our lives together, so we might as well, you know? So I head to my old bank, Scotiabank, for a mortgage. This is where I worked for 7 years, mind you. Despite having the down payment and the ability to get to pay together, our application for a modest $350,000, which is practically peanuts in Toronto's market, gets instantly rejected. I was crushed. We were crushed. It was like our dream to have a home together. The fact that I did not have an employment letter anymore and that my wife was not a permanent resident at the time made our case too complicated. And that's when our new sponsor, old friend, Joe Purewall Mortgage Agent, came into our lives in 2018. Joe literally saved us. We didn't know there was other ways to buy a home in Ontario other than with the five big banks. So like there's other banks that do this too. Not only did we buy our first apartment in 2018, but we later sold it to buy a bigger one when my son Liam was born in 2020. The best part, Joe's team speaks Spanish. So if you're a newcomer or a Latino dreaming of having your own home in Ontario, call or WhatsApp Joe right now at plus one 905-330-6090. We all have complicated situations, and with Joe, you can ask all those tricky, awkward questions without the fear of judgment, because they speak Spanish. Karina will pick up your call. They will offer you the best rates and in Ontario and the best solutions for our unique journeys. That's Joe Purewall at +1-905-330-6090. Or if it's easier, just look at the episode notes. It's all there, my friends. And now, back to the episode. Thank you, Joe.
And now, we start with the main man himself. Please put your hands together for Carlos Chalico. How are you, brother?
I'm excited. I'm flattered. Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. And I want to say, now that you talked about your shows, I have got the pleasure of seeing Stefan performing more than once, and he's amazing. So
I appreciate
don't miss those shows.
Hey, fun fact, actually. You know, the show that you brought us in for at the Royal Theater last year, like exactly a year ago, just over a year ago.
Yeah.
We did a show for Alpha, and we filmed it. And that reel about raising kids went viral for me.
Oh, wow.
I put it on my Instagram. It has like almost 1 million views, and it's gone really crazy. And that was like the beginning of me feeling more comfortable with my English comedy. And now I'm filming my first comedy special. So thank you for the invite.
No, that's great. And I am surprised that this is the first time you're performing in English.
I mean, it's my first comedy special. Like 1 million times in English, but
yeah.
It's like my hour. It's going to be filmed, put on YouTube, Spotify, everywhere.
That's cool.
I got a Brazilian director who's done like 90 plus comedy specials, a bunch for Netflix, and he just moved to Canada. So I'm working with him, and it's going to be very excited. I want to see you there.
I will be there. That's cool. We want to see you there. So, yeah, sure. And when I say you, for those that are just listening to us, I am pointing to the camera. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you're watching on Spotify, you know that Spotify now has video. So you can check out, you can listen, but you also can enjoy. Tell me a little bit about Mexico City. Started your career in 1996. Came to Toronto 2012. Did you always want to do cybersecurity, or how did you get into this space? Because, I mean, 50 years ago, it wasn't like engineering or doctors, which has always existed.
Yeah.
What was your beginning? How did you come closer to cybersecurity?
I love the mocks. It was a series of fortunate events. I was just very lucky, I have to say.
Yeah.
My dad is a pediatrician, so. Wow. At some point in time, I thought I wanted to be a doctor, a medic myself.
Yeah.
And when I started thinking of it, I said, I will not be able to live with the sense of guilty I may have if one of my patients just die. So
you said that.
I thought of that. And I remember talking to my father about that. And he said to me, well, when you're a doctor, you need to find a way to deal with that, to just cope with that. And I said, that's precisely what I don't want to do. I think I don't have the heart for that. And I am not criticizing you, I get it.
Yeah.
But that's not for me. So I think I started playing with computers when I was very young. And I started working with the Commodore 64, the Commodore VIC-20 in the 80s. Early 80s.
You're the Mexican Steve Jobs.
That's too much. I would love to say yes, but no. I have to tell you, and this is I think nice and inspiring, but pretty sad as well.
Yeah.
I had a very talented friend who was amazing coding in the Commodore 64. He was coding games. We were 13 years old.
Wow.
And the guy was doing these in BASIC with sprites, which is the name of these old graphics in the Commodore 64. And he was great. And unfortunately, he passed away last year. And because of different circumstances in life, he wasn't able to make it the way I think he should. But I think he was one of my inspirations, and
really?
He was one of the persons. We were the same age, but he was a genius. And I went into computers because of him and doing research because of him. At some point, I said, no, I hate computers. I think this is not for me. This was when I was going to high school in Mexico. So I took a different direction and I started going into management and human resources and stuff like that. And then before going to university, I said, no, I was mistaken. It's not this path. My path is technology. So I need to go back to technology. So I went to something that is equivalent to IT management in Mexico.
What's it called?
Informatica in Spanish.
Yes.
Yeah. And
where did you study? In UNAM?
A very small school that I think is known by the owner and his mom. And by us, the school doesn't even exist now.
Well, now they're going to know. What's it
called?
Yeah,
of course. It was called Centro de Educación Profesional, or Professional Education Center.
Generic.
Yeah, of course, it is. And now it is funny because now the school is called Centro Universitario San Ángel. It is not a center. It is not a university. It is not in San Ángel. So I don't know who came with that name, but that's the school. So
they're trying to maximize on their SEO.
I know. So... pretty small school. I went there to study IT. As it happens in every school, I had very good teachers, very bad teachers as well. But there was one in my last semester, a shy guy, like very focused in his work, but very talented in what he was able to do, very passionate about that. And he was teaching me.
Armando Hernandez?
I think the name was Armando, but not Hernandez. No. Humberto Lara was the name. Is the name because he's still alive, fortunately. And his passion and the way he explained stuff just made me be completely engaged with what he was doing. So
was he teaching cybersecurity?
He was teaching IT audit. Cybersecurity didn't even exist as a concept, as you said before.
Wow.
So I am talking about 1996, 1997. So... Humberto came with these concepts and the models and all that stuff, and I loved it. At the time, I was working as the IT supervisor, IT manager of a small graphic design company. And,
yeah. In Mexico City.
And I decided that I needed to leave that because that company was not going in the direction I wanted to go. So I left the company, and I said, I want to focus in my school, complete school, and then I will look for a job. And one day this teacher comes and says, guys, I do have an opportunity with a large firm that is looking for professionals to do what I teach here. So this is an entry position. If anyone is interested, just let me know. And I was physically pushed by my friends. They started saying, hey, you should go to him and talk to him about this opportunity. This seems to be good for you. And I said, no. And they said, dude, you're jobless. You need to look for something. And I said, dude, I don't want to look for anything right now. I want to be focused in school. So no. So I was, again, physically pushed in front of the teacher. And I said, okay, what is this about?
And what did they feel that you had that they didn't? Why didn't they?
I don't know. I think it was just a passion I had in that class because it was my favorite class.
Oh, there you go.
So I think that's why they made the connection. And they said, well, this is a teacher that he likes. This is a topic that he loves. So this is for him. And I have to thank them for that, and my teacher as well, because they finally put me in front of him, and he said, well, this is to work for a large organization. The name is Mancera. Mancera is a Mexican name of the firm that represents Ernst & Young in Mexico. So I didn't even know about the business of the Big Fours, which is how these big professional service firms are called. The four leaders in the world are identified as the Big Fours. And
so the Big Four is EY, PwC,
KPMG, and Deloitte. Yeah. So at the time, it was the Big Eight. The thing is that mergers
and acquisitions.
Unfortunately, one of those disappeared after the collapse of Enron.
Yes.
In the early 2000s. So the market just shaped. And from having eight in the late 90s, we came to four right now. So went to the interview. It went well. Second interview, it went well. 3 months passed, nothing happened. And then one day I got a phone call.
Three months?
Insane. I have to say, they didn't call me. I called them. Because I was one day just cleaning my room and I found the business card of one of the managers I talked to. And I said, I never heard from them. I would love to know what happened. It was supposed to be urgent.
Yeah.
So I called them and I said, hey, what happened? I mean, you may remember me. My name is Carlos, and I was in an interview. I just want to know what happened.
And they were like, which Carlos?
No. They said, Carlos, thank God you called us. It's urgent. And I said, oh, yeah, I can see it. 3 months. They said, yeah. Is it possible for you to come tomorrow? And I said, yes, sure. Can you start next Monday? And I said, So now it's urgent, really urgent.
Wow.
So that's how it happened. I went up to Human Resources, and I started working for the firm without properly understanding what I was going to do. I thought it was not for me because I saw the organization as an accounting organization. And I said, I am not an accountant and I don't want to be an accountant.
Like forensic accounting?
No.
IT accounting?
At the time, and I think it still happens today, when you talk to some people, the professional services firms tend to be identified as accounting firms, only focus on financial audit. And even as an employee, when I joined the firm in late 90s, I thought it was just that. So it was not even clear for me what I was going to be doing there.
Classic.
I started talking to people, I started working, I started doing analytics at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Then I liked it. Then I jumped into IT audit. And I liked it. And just doing that, I spent almost 4 years with the firm from 1996 to 2000. I went through the 2000 concerns. You may remember that.
Yeah, the world was going to end.
Exactly. And it didn't end, thanks to all of us. It's a problem. I have to say, of course not. But at the time, the firm said, I think that these guys that are doing IT audit have some other skills that we can use for some other purposes. So let's do more with them. And different services came, and one of those services was information security. So I started reading about
information security. Just another word for cybersecurity?
It was like the grandfather of cybersecurity.
Information security was the grandfather of cybersecurity.
That's what I can say now. Wow. And I started reading about that. I liked the topic, and I said, I want to do that. So I was lucky enough that the firm said, okay, let's go for it. What about having you leading the creation of an information security team? So I was in charge of creating the first information security team for the firm in Mexico. And I think it was the first one in Latin America. It was
really
great adventure, an amazing team, amazing professionals I am still in touch with. We had fun. So the team started growing. We positioned the team as one of the leaders in the Mexican market. It was cool. With time, the name evolved into cybersecurity. I was invited to become a partner for the Mexican practice in 2006. The year after, we started working in Mexico in the preparation of the Mexican regulation for privacy matters.
Wow. So,
I started working on privacy and I loved what privacy was connected to. So I added privacy to my skills. I started doing privacy as well and help clients on that. In 2009, I became the managing partner for Mexico and Central America in everything that was related to cybersecurity and privacy. And then in 2012, I came with this idea of moving to Canada to enjoy the winter. So.
But how did that come about? You talked like, when was the seed planted? Had you come to Canada for a conference? Was Mexico getting dangerous? Did you want a different future for your kids? Or you had heard that Toronto is a great city? Like, why Toronto and not like Stockholm or like South Africa?
Or Helsinki. Yeah.
Or Helsinki.
It's interesting because I had the idea of working outside of Mexico since, I don't know, early 2000s. And
since being friends with Humberto Lara.
Yeah, exactly. Good memory. Hello, Humberto, if you're seeing this.
He's going to see this. Hopefully. Yeah, 100%.
He deserves all my respect and gratitude. The thing is that Ernst & Young, as other professional services firms, has a pretty interesting global exchange program. And that means that you go to a different country to work for a year and a half to 2 years to learn from the practices in that country, to then come back to your country and do that. And at some point, I was very interested in going to the Netherlands, just because I had a chance to go to the Netherlands and I loved the place. And I was very excited until someone asked me, do you speak Dutch? And I said, no. And they said, it will be hard. So the Netherlands initiative just collapsed there. And then I started looking for an opportunity to move to LA for a couple of years. It didn't work. So I never left the country to go anywhere.
And then when you said you were going to LA, somebody said, do you speak Mexican?
Exactly. You may have a chance there. So it didn't work. And the time was just passing by. And I think I started to experience a combination of what you were saying. I love Mexico, but unfortunately, I started to feel the issues with crime. And insecurity and stuff like that. And I said, I think I need to do something to offer a safer space to my family. Yeah. And I made a trip to Vancouver because a friend of mine who used to work with me in Mexico with EY moved to Vancouver, and I love the place. So I spent 3 weeks in Vancouver. Jose Medina, he tolerated me at his house for 3 weeks.
Pepe Medina,
yeah, he recently moved to Toronto. I will make a connection shortly.
So he will probably see this.
Yeah,
shout out
hopefully,
to Pepe Medina.
Hopefully, yeah. And I was just one day talking to him, and I told him, you know, I am concerned about what's happening in Mexico, and I have always had the interest in working somewhere else. So he didn't let me complete the sentence when he said, come to Canada. And I said, sure, that's cool, but I can't just come.
Yeah,
I need to set up a plan or something. I mean, it is not myself anymore. I have a family.
Yeah.
So I cannot be that adventurous. And he said, well, we will help that. We will resolve that, excuse me. And on the last week of my visit, he came back home and he said, I have 4 interviews for you. And I said, Pepe, I'm on vacation. I mean, I'm not even prepared. No. Mm. And he said, well, everything is arranged. You cannot let me down. These people knows me. You will cause me a serious trouble if you don't go. So I got a suit that didn't fit me. It was smaller. A pair of shoes that didn't fit me. They were
this
larger.
In Vancouver?
In Vancouver.
Wow.
And I went to the 4 interviews. I haven't done an interview in more than 15 years. Never in English. And I was in vacation mode. So
yeah,
you can realize how those interviews were. They were pathetic.
Were they more like informational interviews, or were there roles assigned?
They were formal interviews.
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, Pepe did his work, and I did my best, but I delivered my worst. So I have to say. So
what were the results?
Last day, Pepe says to me, why don't you go to your interview, and after the interview, come to my office. I will introduce you to the gang, the office, and then we can just go back home together. And I said, yeah, sure. So I went to the interview. It was as bad as the previous ones. I then went to his office, a very nice office in downtown Vancouver, next to where the steam clock is.
Yes.
Beautiful. It was summer.
Gaston.
Exactly. It was summer, and the office was next to this clock, so a very nice terrace. We just got coffee from a coffee shop, and we were just talking. And one of the owners of the company happened to be there, a very nice gentleman, Nelson Lai. He lives in Vancouver, and we just talked.
Shout out to Nelson Lai. He might be listening.
Absolutely. I hope. I will let him know. So we were just talking, and it was a very nice conversation. We went back to Pepe's house. Nothing else happened. Flew back to Mexico. And then sometime later, maybe 6 months after that, I just got a phone call from Nelson.
And you're like, Carlos, we've been waiting for you. It's urgent. Can you start Monday?
Yeah, just like that. Yeah. And he said to me, Carlos, I know that you're looking for something in Vancouver. We have nothing in Vancouver, but our company is expanding to the East Coast. We have an office in Toronto, an office in Montreal. We want someone to help us with the business. So if you want to go for that, we are willing to make a bet. So what do you think?
Wow.
And I said, this is terrifying. Yeah. And amazing, of course, but the issue was that I started thinking of leaving EY, and it was sad, and I said, it is going to be complicated. I have devoted a lot of time from my life and my career, so I started hesitating. I started with this challenge and saying, the opportunity is great, but what about the things I will leave?
That you built.
Exactly. Long story short, I said, I am not sure if I will have another opportunity like this one. So I think I have to take it. So.
And this was not with EY?
This was not with EY.
Okay.
So I was, as I said before, terrified, legitimately terrified. I remember receiving the contract, not the contract.
The job offer.
Yeah, in September 2012. And I remember Pepe calling me on September the 15th. You know that September the 15th is important for all of us.
The independence,
exactly.
Yeah.
So because of that, I have the date in my head. And I remember Pep saying, Carlos, wait. We are waiting for you to resolve this. I want you to be very honest with me. If you want to make this happen, let's move this forward. If you don't, that's fine. Just let me know. Because we really need someone for this position. And we are thinking
Pepe
about
was a part of this company.
Pepe was part of this company. Yes. So he worked for Nelson. And I said, Pepe, you know what? The answer is yes. But I'm kind of nervous. And I am right now going to the airport because I need to make a trip to Buenos Aires. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make a complete decision without talking to EY. They deserve my respect, so I need to go back to them and talk to them before I make any final decision. So please let me do that. So he said, that's fine. Go to your trip. Do whatever you want to do. We will wait for you. That's fine. When you come back, let me know, and that will be the final decision. So I went to Buenos Aires. My wife was with me. We talked about the situation. Lily, by the way, I hope she's hearing this.
Lily, your wife?
Lily, my wife.
Lily?
Lily.
Lily.
Liliana.
Shout out to Lily.
Thank you. So we went to Buenos Aires, talked about the situation. We made the decision of moving. And then when I came back, I went to EY, talked about the situation. It was tough. In my heart, I didn't want to go, and they didn't want to let me go. So
it was like a breakup almost.
It was. And we started a process of having them inviting me to stay. They were very generous with me. And I ended up saying, I really appreciate what you're trying to do, but I really want to go. And I think it's time for me to go. So long story short, because it was sad, but it was good. They said, Carlos, we understand the situation. You have our full support. Go. Good luck.
Wow.
So close the process. Talk to my team. I was in charge of a team of close to 100 by the time.
Wow.
I still have the picture of that final meeting we had when I said goodbye and explained
tears.
The situation. It was bittersweet. But we made it and we moved. And we came to Toronto. We started working for this company. I was with them for 3 years. It was cool. I ended up going to another company after that, Nimity. Stayed with them for a couple of years. And then it was interesting because consulting companies started knocking my door, inviting me to go to them. And I said, well, if I will go back to consulting, maybe it's time to try to go back to what I call home. So knocked the door at EY, started having conversations with them, and it worked. And now I'm back with EY in Toronto.
Wow, just, full circle.
Just moving forward. Yeah, it's cool. It's been amazing. Funnily, In an interesting and nice coincidence, my wife, Lily, she used to work for FedEx in Mexico, and she's working for FedEx again. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's
full circle.
It has worked the same way for both of us. So
that's fantastic. That's great.
That was the story. It's a nice one, I think.
There seems to be a pattern here that your friends help you accomplish what you secretly want. And may not be very vocal about it. They push you in front of Humberto Lara for that position. They get you for interviews without you even asking for it. So
yeah,
and you seem to be doing that indirectly for a lot of people here, where you've helped a million people connect to other people, get jobs. You're involved with Isaka, with Alpha, helping a lot of Latinos get jobs. You helped me with not working to networking, invited me to your events. And for our listeners, what would you, especially newcomers, what would you advise people to do to get these jobs that they really want? It seems like they need to be vocal about it. They need to say what they want, but also, what has been your secret to be effective in these elevator pitches or short informational interviews? Because you seem to have a very good impact in these. I know that maybe the 4 interviews in Vancouver where you weren't ready, they weren't like the best, but it seems like people are knocking on your door, you're connecting with a lot of people, and you're going on the right path in where you want to go. What advice would you give in terms of building authentic relationships, networking, and achieving meaningful jobs to newcomers?
I think you're right. I think that one of the things is being vocal. When you want to do things in general, not only looking for a job, when you have a project in mind,
yeah,
I think that the best thing you can do is to be vocal about that, because when you are vocal about that, you will start sharing your idea and you will find other people that thinks alike,
yeah,
or that is willing to help, or that is willing to add or do something, or that will be able to point you to someone that will be able to help you. I remember when I was in the process of thinking that my relationship with my first employer in Canada was not taking me to where I wanted to go, I said, I think I need to look for something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I did what I think many newcomers do. I started looking for jobs online. So started identifying opportunities, applying to those positions, and I was always rejected. Always, all the time. But I was just doing that overnight in my basement by myself. It was just me doing it. And I had these monsters in my head that were saying to me, you need to do this on your own. You need to be discreet. No one else needs to know this. Mm-hmm. Because what will happen if people know that you're looking for a job? What will they think? Are they thinking you're failing? Are you like not good at what you're doing? And is it the reason why you're looking for something? And what if your boss knows about the situation? And then at some point I said, what am I afraid of? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, I am looking for change, and that's something that moves you out of your comfort zone and makes you feel and think differently. I get that, but what is it that I have in mind? I mean, let's say that people know that I am looking for a job. What's the problem with that? I think that instead of being concerned about what they think from a negative perspective, I need to think how they can help me.
Yeah.
And number one. And number two, let's say that my boss knows that I am looking for a job. I think it will be embarrassing, yes, because I think it will be better if I am the one going to Kim and talking to Kim about this. But let's say that it happens. It is real. I mean, I am not satisfied with what I am having right now. It was great when I came, but it is not working anymore. So I think I need to face the situation. So I started changing my strategy completely. And I went to what I call promiscuous mode, which is talking to everyone about what I was looking for. So I remember at the time going to events and saying, hello, how are you? My name is Carlos Chalico. I am a cybersecurity and privacy professional, and I am looking for a job. So if you happen to know about something, please let me know.
That's unbelievable.
So just like that, I started just spreading the word and spreading the word and spreading the word. And I remember that there's a friend of mine that I, for whatever reason, I end up seeing every year to have a coffee in January.
Pepe Medina.
No. Stella Coyne.
Shout out to Stella Coyne. She may be listening to this.
Yeah, hopefully she will. Yeah, I am sure she is. So I remember that we had one of our January coffees, and I shared with her the situation. And she said, you know what? I know someone that is looking for someone like you. Talk to him. And that's how I got the next job.
Wow.
So I think that just getting focused on the question you asked, I think you need to be vocal, you need to talk to people, and you need to amplify your voice through others.
Yeah.
I think that I didn't see positive results in looking for opportunities online. I only had one opportunity materializing in a job offer in 8 years.
Wow.
Coming just from an online interaction. So I don't think that people is willing to wait for years to have that. I think that now that we have the advantage that we can go out again and not being confined in our houses because of COVID, I think that now is a time to go out, talk to people, go to social events, get togethers. There's many associations, there's not working to networking, and there's many others doing similar things. You need to go out there and let others know that you are looking for something, because those others will help you get what you are trying to get.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
Latinas in Tech, Hispanotech, yeah. Alpha, there's so many. Access Employment. And I totally agree with you. Your story needs to be short and sweet,
yeah,
so that people can tell it on your behalf when you're not there. You gotta tell people what you want. And you gotta look for that job when you have the job, not when you're out of the job, because once you're out of the job, it's too late. Yeah. It's like when you get somebody that messages you and they're like, oh, can you get me a, it's like, you just want me to get whatever outcome. But if you reach out when there's not a job on the other side, it is an authentic request.
Exactly.
And you want to get to know each other. And it could be both ways. Like, I could help you, you could help me. You develop those meaningful relationships. And now you don't even, obviously it's better in person, but now you can develop these relationships little by little, even on LinkedIn or Instagram. Exactly. A lot of decision makers don't get comments or likes on LinkedIn, but they're sharing things that are meaningful to them. Yeah. So if you like or you comment or you're supportive or you contribute to the conversation, you are getting noticed.
Yeah.
After two or three times, they'll click on your name and they'll see your experience.
Exactly.
And then once you message them, you've already built some real estate in their heart and they know who you are because you've been commenting. And now you can ask for that 5-minute coffee chat.
Exactly.
And you got to tell them what you want.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right. I miss that part. But when it comes to networking, it is not only identifying people and talking to them once.
Yeah.
While you're looking for a job. I mean, you are supposed to be building in this network to build relationships. I mean, it's like our case.
I mean,
I met you and I remember seeing you performing at different shows. And
how
it was
did we
great.
Meet each other? I know you came to see Armando years ago.
Yeah, but I remember before that, it was the first time I saw you performing was at a Hispanotech event.
Online?
No, in person, a long time ago. Yeah, a long time ago at PwC's building.
Okay.
And I loved it. And shortly after that, Armando Hernandez, shout out
to Armando Hernandez for sure watching this. We just called him. He has to watch.
I met Armando because he's married to a very good friend of mine. Now he's, of course, a very good friend of mine as well.
Karen Todd for sure watching this.
Exactly. And one day, we knew Armando, and Armando is great, but he's very quiet.
Yes.
And but I love that every single time he says something, it's very precise,
it's
very accurate, and generally very funny. So one day I remember talking to Karen, and Karen said, would you be interested in coming to Armando's graduation? And I said, graduation of what? And she said, he's doing a stand-up comedy course and he's graduating. And I said, no, you gotta be kidding. And she said, no, I'm not, he is. And where? At a bar somewhere in Toronto. And I said, no, sure, I will be there. I don't want to miss it. And we were there for the graduation. It was great. And that's, I think, when we finally had the opportunity to talk to each other. But what I want to say is that it's been something that we have been maintaining over time.
Yeah.
I mean, we look after each other and we support each other. And that's how we have built a relationship. And I think that's how it works with everyone. So you are absolutely right. It is not that you need to go to your contacts when you need them. You need to build true relationships because you never know when you are going to be needing the support of other person.
Absolutely.
So that's how I think it works. And that's what I think we need to do in order to make up the networks something effective. The other thing that I want to just rescue from what you said, which is very useful, is this description of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That I think, of course, the elevator pitch is pretty relevant, but I think it goes beyond that. When I have the chance to talk to someone that is looking for a job or is a newcomer, one of the first situations I visit is, have you written your story? Have you taken time to write that story about you? Because we love hearing stories. That's how
Absolutely.
We people are. So every single one of us is a character within our own story. So what I say to them is, think of you as the main character of your story. So this main character wants to go somewhere right now. Why, how, and what is moving this character into that direction? So think of that and write the story. And once you have written the story, then have someone with fresh eyes, come and read your story and see how it flows and identify someone that is a little bit better equipped than you in English so that this person can not only criticize the flow of the story, but that can help you identify grammar issues or things that you need to say differently so that you can have something that is very well prepared. And then once you have that, read it and read it and read it and say it loud. Because if you do that, my intention is not, when I talk to people, I say this to them, my intention is not to have you memorizing this just because. The idea is that if you go through this once, twice, and many more times, you will come to a point where if someone asks you whatever, you will be picking pieces of that story automatically to respond to the questions. And if you don't do that, and if you're in the middle of an interview, or if you're in an elevator with someone, you will be trying to structure the idea of what you want to deliver, and that will take away the opportunity you are looking for.
Yes.
So that's why I see it. So that's why I think that what you were saying of thinking of this story and building the elevator pitch is fundamental. Yeah.
Fun fact, Carlos and I are both instructors at the University of Toronto School of Continuing Studies, and I'm going to connect this. Carlos in cybersecurity, and I teach a course called Business Presentations and Public Security and public speaking,
which is very secure. Yeah.
Yep. So what I mean by that is my good friend Iwan Juanis Ruiz, who designed the course and who actually invited me through authentic networking, through admiration of his story, invited him to the podcast, and I didn't even know that he did this. And then he's like, we're looking for instructors. I think you'd be a great fit. Do you want to teach at U of T? And I was like, of course.
Yeah.
And I went to U of T. So it's like full circle. Exactly. So in the course, we say that the objective of any presentation is to spark curiosity. It's not necessarily to inform, to communicate, to entertain, to facilitate. Yeah, these are all great things. But what are the odds that everybody in the audience, 1,000 people, will think that you accomplished all those things? Slim to none. So the objective, we argue, of any speech is to spark curiosity, because then you're not asking for their time. They're willing to give it. They're willing to research the topic on their own time. They want to ask questions in the presentation, and then it's not a monologue. It's actually a conversation. The world champion of public speaking in 1995 was on the podcast. He's a friend. His name is Mark Brown. Mm-hmm. And he has this quote that I love, and it's, don't give a speech, deliver an experience. So when we talk about elevator pitches and when we talk about introducing ourselves, this is the thing. People can only remember like one or two things about you and how you made them feel, like Maya Angelou. So basically, I always give this example. In 2009 to 2013, I had three leg surgeries. I tore my ligament playing soccer, and I could never get back. I was 5 years without playing soccer, which was the love of my life. And for literally not even 5 years that I was injured, like 8 years, everybody who saw me on the street, at the bank, in the university, at the party, they would all single-handedly say, how's your leg? How's your leg? That's the one thing they could remember of me. And people can only remember like one or two or three max things about you.
And one was your leg.
And one was my leg. So when I talk about public speaking and pitching and connecting, amateurs, they let the audience decide what that is. Professionals, they pick what that is in advance. Once you have your story, you can pick what you share depending on the audience and your objective so that they remember only those things that you share. Now, a lot of people just remember that I'm a banker turned comedian, or a lot of people just know that I'm comedian, or that I'm from Costa Rica, or that I have a 3-year-old kid, or that I teach comedy or public speaking. But depending on the audience, I'll share different snippets of my life that will connect and enable whatever objective I'm looking for. So the one question that is always on the test is, what do you do? Does it matter what party, what work, what networking event? It always comes up. It's like, oh, that's cool. You're from Mexico. Cool. And what do you do here? And a lot of people, they will fail that, and they will say just like accounting. And then that's the end of the conversation. But what if you phrase it by the objective or the what you help people achieve? And a lot of people, so what I would say sometimes is I help people become public speaking machines, or I help people feel at home in Canada through humor, or I help professionals become confident speakers. And when you say that, people, oh, that's kind of cool. Tell me more. It's just sparking curiosity.
And we didn't prepare that.
And we didn't. So I find that, like, even for you, I have no idea what you do. But I know it's like cybersecurity. So any, like, since I met you, anybody who remotely says like, oh, like IT, cybersecurity, I'm like, do you know Carlos Chalico? And they 99% say, yeah. But even like Daniel Callejas, yeah. Actually Daniel Callejas,
yeah,
was the one who connected me to you, apart from the fact that we had already talked. But Daniel Callejas, we had started that email.
Yeah, that's how we went to the first EY show.
Mm-hmm. And that I have no idea what Daniel does, but I just know that you guys speak the same language.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is cybersecurity and how do you... If you were talking to a 10-year-old, what is cybersecurity? And I was asking you before the show, but I told you don't answer because I want to ask you during the podcast. How do you generate an attack?
Well, the answer for a 10-year-old would be, it's exciting, it's cool, it's fun, and we need you. That would be it. But before going there, I just want to emphasize something that I think is pretty important. And I think on this sparking of curiosity, I think we also need to be curious.
Yeah.
And what I want to say, I love the story you shared on how you made it to the University of Toronto. In my case, I remember that I had to deliver a presentation, my first presentation in English. I was terrified as well. And I became very nervous because the guy that was presenting before me at this event, he was good. He is good. Jerry Gardner,
shout out, he might be listening to
of
this.
Course he is. I was nervous because not only he was good, but he was touching many of the topics I was going to be presenting.
Yeah.
And talking about some cases, and I said, oh my god, this guy is going to ruin my presentation, he's going to be killing the surprises I had. But he didn't. Without knowing each other, he simply set the stage for me. So when he was done with his presentation, I just approached him and I said, congratulations, I love the presentation, it was cool, and you perfectly set the stage for me. So he started asking questions. What is your topic about? What do you do? Who do you work for? Etc., etc., etc. And the final question was, do you want to teach at the University of Toronto?
No.
Yeah. So what I want to say is that it came from my curiosity. I just came to say, hey, it was cool. So that triggered a series of questions that ended up there. And he said to me, Carlos, please don't think that I am arrogant, but I am very busy. So if you really want to teach with us, just be insistent. And I was. So I ended up teaching with him for a couple of years. Then he took his path, I took mine, because he's more into analytics and I am more in cybersecurity. So that's how it happened. But this curiosity wasn't the first part of this.
In fact, in Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, there's like a bunch of tips and techniques. Like there's like six main ones. And one of the main ones on how to get people to like you is just to be curious, to listen to other people. And I find that I was trying to analyze what makes Carlos so lovable. And that's it. Like you're curious and like, everybody's number one fan. So everybody loves you. Even if we don't know if you're a good guy.
Yeah.
Well, you might be a horrible person, but we all love you.
Thank you.
Only your wife, Lily, knows.
Yeah, she knows
the truth. And your kids.
She knows the truth. They know the truth. And my dog, Leia. Shout out to Leia.
Did you name her Leia because of Star Wars?
Yes, of course.
You're a big Star Wars fan, eh?
I am. So that's,
oh, there you go. Star Wars.
Exactly. So that's why she got the name. So cybersecurity. I do help put bad guys away in the computer.
Put bad guys away online.
In the computer. Yeah, so I think that would be my simple explanation. Cybersecurity has evolved tremendously since I started back in late 90s to date. Just the name. If we become very academic, information security as a concept is still alive, and it is not the same as cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is let me just go step by step. Information security is the collection of methods, policies, procedures you will have to protect information. Protect information means preserving confidentiality, integrity, and availability. That's the main purpose. When we say information, that means information in any media. That can be information on paper, that can be information painted on the walls, that can be information in the heads of the executives, and information in electronic media. That's information security. It's very broad. Cybersecurity is focused on information that is associated to the cyberspace. However, the cybersecurity word has become like fancy, and it's a buzzword right now. And we tend to use in the market cybersecurity as a synonym of information security, but they are not necessarily the same. The spectrum of what you can do on cyber has now become very wide, and you can be very, I will say, strategic and managerial. You can be in a position where you need to define a framework to help a company define policies, procedures, controls to comply perhaps with a regulation or to be in alignment with a very specific standard. Or you can be very technical and you can be a pen tester, or you can be an ethical hacker, which means that you will be acting as if you were a hacker,
okay,
trying to get access, unauthorized access to the system, just to document the path you followed, to then say to the person that requested this service, these are the holes I found in the system.
Wow.
From the multiple holes I found, I decided that the one that was most easy to follow to get access to something was this one. So I followed that path. I found a series of user accounts. I tried passwords on some of them. I got access with one. Then when I got access with that one, I tried to escalate privileges, which means instead of being a regular user, I tried to find a way to become an administrator of the system. And then when I became the administrator of the system, I was able to have access to this and this and this and that. That's what a penetration tester can do on the technical side.
Well, that's what pen tester means.
Exactly.
When you initially messaged me, I was like, testing pens? What?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so pen tester.
Let's come up with a very simple example that somebody like, I mean, I understood what you said, but like, how true is it these scenarios where like, I'm just going to give scenarios that are hypothetical, but they're actually occurring. How true is it that there's malicious actor cyber pirates from Russia or other entities where they will try to hack? I'm not even sure if I'm using the right terminology here, but hack, for example, a bank like RBC, take 300,000 pieces of data and user information about clients, and then call, not call RBC, but send a message to RBC and say, if you want these back, you gotta send 500,000 via Bitcoin or Ether. I don't even know. Is this a possible scenario? Do these things happen? And is that what you prevent, or is that not what you prevent?
Yeah, that happens. And technically, this type of situation is called a ransomware attack.
Ransomware, okay.
So you have someone just finding vulnerabilities in the system, finding a way to get access to this information, taking this information or encrypting this information so that you cannot have access to it. And they will ask for a ransom. They will say,
and the only way to unencrypted, is that a word? Like de-encrypted, is it's through them?
They have a key and they say, I will give you the key if you pay the ransom.
And do sometimes big entities like banks or insurance firms or Nike will pay the ransom, or they don't negotiate?
That's a very good question. You know, paying the ransom is a decision that every single company will do. However,
Will assess, or they will pay the ransom?
They will assess and they will decide what to do, okay, depending on different circumstances. It is hard to say what to do because every single situation is going to be different. But what I want to say is that paying the ransom can make you a target for a longer period, because it will be known that you're willing to pay the ransom. In some countries, it's even considered to be illegal because you can be considered as an organization that is funding crime. So you got to be very careful on which path you are going to be following.
Is there ransomware insurance?
There's cybersecurity insurance that can respond to these situations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course, you need to read the policy and you need to see how that is connected to what you will be doing, and decide if that's the type of insurance you will be having. Cyber insurance companies will ask for different things in order to know when they are going to be providing you with a policy like that. But what I want to say with all of this is that the scenario is complex, is serious, and these are topics that companies and individuals need to be thinking of. Yes, this is something I help with. It is not the only thing I do. In my current position, I am more connected into privacy than into responding to ransomware attacks. But within our team, there's of course people that is specialized on this. We are living right now in a world, Stefan, where we don't need to think if we are going to be hit by any situation like this. It is that we need to think how we are going to be reacting when it happens, because it will happen. So
who is we? Like me, or it, like it can, me as a member of Scotiabank, or me as a Canadian member of Gmail?
Sadly, this is something that can be impacting corporations or individuals as well. So we need to be prepared. Again, this is serious, and the people that is doing this is people that has an objective, and this is groups that exist that we need to respect, that we need to understand that we'll have their goals, and we need to be prepared to deal with
like well-coordinated, organized groups.
Exactly. So that's because they do that, we need to be prepared as well in order to prevent or respond to that. That's what we need to do. So that's what we do in cybersecurity. As I said before, in recent times, in the last, I would say, 4 years, my focus has switched a little bit, and I have completely paid attention into privacy. So.
And by that, you mean, what's the difference between...
Yeah, let me tell you what I do there. In the case of privacy is a discipline that is focused mainly in two things. The first one is giving the proper protection mechanisms to personal information.
Okay.
What's personal information? Information about an individual like you or me, your name, general identity information, but also information that can be sensitive, like, for example, health-related information, financial information about your sexual life, information about your religion, information about your way of thinking. There's regulations around the world that are defining how privacy needs to be managed and how personal information needs to be protected. Right now, we are facing pretty interesting challenges because many companies are trying to find ways to better use data, to understand customers, to understand employees, perhaps to use artificial intelligence to make processes flow more rapidly. And of course, all of that is something that is attractive and that can be very, very useful. But in order to get the proper benefit of that, taking care of people, you need to identify how the use of these multiple technologies may impact Stefan or Carlos or any other individual, mm-hmm, so that you can define the proper controls to use these technologies without impacting people. So that's what I do now.
Wow.
It's a, I will say, like within the cybersecurity space, something that is very specific. I said that privacy has two purposes or two main goals, and I just described one, which is giving protection to personal information. The second one is defining the proper mechanisms within the organization to allow people to exercise their privacy rights. What these privacy rights are? Let's say that I want to go to my bank and find out which personal information my bank has about me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I have these, I ask the bank, please help me understand how you are using this personal information. And the bank needs to explain to me how the personal information is being used. And then I can say, you know what, from the information you provided me, there's a couple of mistakes that I want to correct, or maybe not mistakes, I have changed. Maybe I got married, or I
got a kid,
and I need to update that. So I need to update my information. And also, I have understood how you're using my information. There's one specific thing you are doing that I don't like anymore. Let's say marketing. You are constantly sending to me emails talking about your services or products. I don't want to get that anymore. So please stop doing that. These are rights we have. We have regulations in Canada, there's regulations in Costa Rica, in Mexico, and in some other countries. The gold standard right now is Europe, with new rights and significant fines that can be imposed in companies that are not complying with this.
Wow.
So that's what I am doing. Within the cybersecurity space, I have found that niche that has become what I do now. It's my passion, and that's what I am paying more attention to. So what I want to say with this is that cybersecurity has been significantly expanded in the years, and it has become highly specialized. So for someone that wants to develop a career in cybersecurity, I think the path is first to understand the general landscape, what are the different domains you can have here, and then identify one that you want to focus on, to target that one and develop skills in that specific field.
And third, message Carlos Chalico on LinkedIn, and he will help you achieve all your dreams.
Yes, exactly. I will do my best, and I mean it, yeah.
And you've been in Canada for over 10 years now. Apart from the steps that we've talked about, like be vocal and tell your story, be curious, what other elements have you identified that give you dividends when it comes to looking for a job in Canada. Those subtleties, I know we talk about them in our meetups in not working to networking, but if we want to get really granular here, but like do the networking, ask for cold calls, ask for coffee chats, follow up all the time. Nobody gets offended in Canada if you follow up. The other thing that I tell people is you have to like sell yourself. Don't like sometimes in Latin America, it's like, oh, if you say how good you are, it's like, ay, se cree mucho, or like, oh, he's so arrogant. But here, you have to sell yourself. You have to say what you've accomplished, and people don't necessarily take it as arrogant. So put yourself up out there, post a lot on LinkedIn, maybe, be yourself, be authentic. I find that one of the great things that you've done is that you volunteer a lot in areas that you're passionate about, and you get to meet a lot of people there. So volunteering is a big one. What other things would you recommend to people to maximize their chances of professional success, but also personal success? I know that you love to bike. I know that you love Star Wars. I know that your daughter loves art, and your son loves rap. So what things would you recommend newcomers do to have personal and professional success, especially if they're coming here with a family?
That's a good question, and hard to respond to with all of the elements we have discussed that you have described. But I think that one additional element that I would add to all of that is patience. It will come. It is hard to say that when you know that you have to look for yourself, to look after others, maybe not only in Canada, but in the country you left to move to this place. But I think that patience is something that we need. I think as well that when you move to Canada, in this case, from any other country, the way I like to see it is that I didn't leave Mexico. So it is not that I moved from Mexico to Canada. I just expanded my area of influence. That's how I see it. I have not like killed my connections with Mexico. I do care about Mexico. And you know that from time to time I go there to deliver conferences, and I stay in touch with the people I know there, my friends, my relatives, everyone. So that's how I see it. It is not that I moved. Well, yes, physically I am living in a different country. I changed my residence. But what I am doing now is that my area of influence is larger. I don't want to lose my connections with Mexico because I love my roots, and I don't pretend to do that. Yeah. That's one thing. The second thing is that although I recognize that I was born in Mexico, of course, and I am proudly Mexican, I like to say today that I identify myself as Latino. So I am completely convinced that our Latin community needs integration and needs union, and we need to work together. And because of that, I prefer to describe myself as Latino when it comes to that.
I love it.
It doesn't matter if I was born in Mexico or whatever. I am Latino, and that's fine. And that's my superpower. And it's your superpower as well. So that's what I would like to say. So I think that summarizing patience and thinking of it that way, that has been very useful for me. It is not that you left your country. You expanded your area of influence. And you never know how the people that is in the country you left can be helping you make it in Canada. That's something that can happen as well.
Absolutely. I think sometimes your biggest perceived weakness could be your biggest superpower. So a lot of people, I've heard some people here say like, oh, they didn't hire me because I'm Latino or whatever. And I don't think so. I think you can make that your superpower. You didn't get hired in spite of being Latino. You got hired because you're Latino. You're not doing well at the bank in spite of being Latino. You're doing great because you are Latino. Like obviously, habits and work ethic influence a lot. But when I made the switch and I started to do well at Scotiabank, I mean, I've told this story a million times here on the podcast, but I became one of the youngest senior managers at Scotiabank when I was 27. And I think the biggest shift that I did was what you did. I used to go to all these awkward networking events, and then I was like talking to somebody from Saskatchewan who just likes hockey. No offense to people in Saskatchewan, you're great. But like, I was there stuck talking for like 2-3 hours, have nothing in common, still curious. But then I left home discouraged. I went home discouraged and be like, man, what a waste of these 3 hours. And I realized I'm never gonna do networking again in spaces that I don't feel comfortable at. I'm gonna do networking at places that I love being at. And it doesn't have to be networking events, because networking is everything, everywhere. So I was doing networking, playing soccer, partying, dancing, telling people what I wanted. And then I was like, why don't I invite more people to the things that I love? So I started inviting everybody at Scotiabank to parties at my house, pre-drinks, after parties, swap parties, to the soccer team. I had like a bunch of analysts, managers, senior manager, director, even VPs coming to my house to play poker. I was inviting to all these Latin. I was organizing all the summer events, all the potlucks. And then I realized that your best version is when you're enjoying,
yeah,
authentic,
having fun.
So if relationships move at the speed of vulnerability and vulnerability builds trust, then the best places to network is when you're being vulnerable and when you're sometimes out of your comfort zone, like playing a game or playing volleyball or at somewhere that requires a little bit of getting out of your comfort zone. If you're sharing already an activity like going bowling or going running or salsa dancing lessons, then you already have something in common, that uncommon commonality that we always talk about. And because you already have that in common, then you kind of trust each other more. And then the question on the test comes up. Oh, so what do you do? But now because I trust you, it's different. Oh, I'm actually looking for a job in accounting or in cybersecurity. Oh, that's very cool. Like, what do you do now? I actually know somebody. Now I want to help you because I trust you.
And the interest is legitimate.
Yeah. And we've had like some connection before because we were playing volleyball or salsa dancing or whatever. So I always tell people the main reason in my books, in addition to the winter, but regardless of the winter, the main reason why I think a lot of newcomers get depressed in Canada is because they stop doing the things that made them back home. So if you played guitar in Colombia, or you were at a band in Colombia, or you played baseball in the Dominican Republic, you come to Canada and you're in survival mode for that first year, which is understandable because you need a job. But don't stop doing those things that is your essence, that make you, because don't postpone that happiness. That happiness will bring success. It's not that when you're successful, you'll become happy and you're gonna start playing guitar again. Don't stop doing those things. Don't stop going to salsa dancing. Don't stop volunteering if that's what you love, because in those things, you're gonna meet people and those people have jobs. And they know people and they'll recommend you because you already have that friendship. So when I did that switch, great things started happening. And then I took those skills and habits into the comedy world and great things have happened. And now I do it with networking to networking, helping thousands of people achieve their own meaningful jobs.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. You're absolutely right. And doing the things that you love is definitely going to help you change your life. I just to share something that is connected to that, I had a couple of uncles that I really loved.
What are their names?
Alberto and Armando.
Shout out to Alberto, they're listening to this.
Hopefully. They passed away more than 10 years ago.
Well, then they're
but here I am with sure
us.
They are here
they're
with
here
us.
With
yeah.
us.
The thing is that they were the siblings of my mom, and the two of them were musicians.
Yeah.
Significantly influenced by the Beatles.
Wow.
So that's why the Beatles is my number one band. It's the one I love, and I am just counting the days for Paul McCartney to come again to Toronto. But what I want to say is that following the Beatles' influence, they used to play rock at the roof of our building. And they had a drummer.
Like your uncles, not the Beatles.
My uncles, yeah. Not the Beatles. Hopefully the Beatles, not my uncles. They had a drummer that was a drinker. So the guy was always missing rehearsals or coming late and drunk.
Yeah.
So, and I was always there. So one of my uncles one day said to the other, what about teaching him how to play the drums? So this guy never comes, and when he comes late. So if he's not in conditions to play the drums, we will have Carlos playing the drums. And he said, that makes sense. So I became the Ringo Starr. So wow. I started, of course, keeping distance apart. I started playing the drums, very basic things, but I loved it. Time passed, I stopped doing that. They passed away. I put that in my drawer. Then a year ago, or a little bit more than that, I simply just left my home, decided on completely conscious about buying a drum set. So I took my kids, we went to store, and I saw an electronic drum set, and I said, I want that. So I took it home. And it was there for almost a year. So I recently was very fortunate, and I got a prize at EY, and the firm said to me, here you have this money to pay whichever course you want to take.
But it cannot be cybersecurity.
That's cool. I, as nerd as I am, I started thinking that. And then I said, maybe this, maybe that, within the cybersecurity space. And then I just said, no. I mean, the firm is going to be paying for this, or myself in other circumstances. This has to be something special. And I thought of Malpensando.
Yes.
And then I told my wife, I think I will enroll at Stefan's course. I would really like to experience that. And she said, I love the idea, and I really like Stefan, but dude, what about the drum set? Why not going for drums lessons? And I said, you're right. So I will be starting with my drums lessons this Saturday.
Wow.
But what I want to say is yes, to overcome this situation that we will go through in winter, and this sense of loneliness and this sense of sadness is something that you can alleviate or improve by doing something you love. And I found this now, but as you said before, it may be writing, it may be singing. I love writing as well. And maybe just going outside. We don't have to be confined in our houses.
Yeah.
Just because there's snow outside. We need to continue our life like it's like that in Canada.
I find that it's being present that makes you feel alive. That's why a lot of people resort to surfing or extreme sports or snowboarding or skiing, and because you just feel alive. And a lot of people say they want peace of mind, but what they really want is peace from mind. They don't want to be in the mind. They don't want to be thinking about, I should have sent that email. I messed up in that meeting. I got to go read this book. They just want to be present and rest from the worries of life. So my drug is stand-up comedy, because I'll be up there for half an hour. I'll be up there an hour and nothing is happening in my mind except exactly what I'm doing. That's why I think people love going to the beach, because there's nothing else to do on the beach than to be on the beach. And when you're playing the drums, you're not thinking, oh, I should have taken that course. Maybe I should have written this email that way. Maybe I should have called my mom. No, you're just playing drums. And it makes you feel alive. Otherwise, the majority of people are going to stay in the winter. They're going to look at their cell phone for 6 hours a day. And then they're going to go at the end of the winter and be like, I didn't accomplish anything. I don't feel like I got it. And it's also getting you out of your comfort zone. So I listened to this recently where happiness is progress. That's all that happiness is. Progress. There's many ways to dissect it. But you're doing that and you feel progress.
Yeah.
And one of the happiest or like coolest days that I had in the recent couple of years is I went white water surfing in a river in Costa Rica.
Wow.
It was like 4 hours, but it felt like 4 seconds, because you're like, ah, and you're jumping and it's insane, and you feel alive. Time goes by like this. And then you look at yourself and you're like, wow, all this time happened. I haven't even looked at my cell phone. And I think that's what our classes do. That's what the drums do. That's what salsa classes do. And I have a hypothesis. I had the founder of Steps Dance Studio here, who does the Salsa and Bachata Congress downtown here. And I told her, I know so many people that have gotten married and they met their spouse in salsa classes, because it's the magic connection. You are vulnerable, and relationships move at the speed of vulnerability. That builds trust. You have to let go because you need to be led and need to lead as well. You're meeting a lot of people, and it doesn't matter if you're a VP or a partner or an analyst or a janitor. All that matters is, are you in the moment?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the secret to happiness, apart from the quality of relationships, is being present. And the last question of the podcast that all the guests get, it's the champagne question.
Oh.
We don't have any champagne, but it's the champagne question. So it goes like this. If we were to meet a year from now, late 2024, with a bottle of champagne, what are we celebrating in Carlos Chalico's life?
That I play the drums again. That I went back to music and that I played the drums again. Rico. I have been procrastinating that for years. And I would love to do that. So,
Ringo Chalico Perez. My friend, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Pleasure is mine.
Thank you. Have you here.
It's been fun.
Crazy stories. A lot of people that we've named that have to listen to the podcast are listening to the podcast. Subscribe, comment, share it with a friend. And as always, thank you so much for being here. Carlos Ringo Star Chalico and Stefan Dyer on the Stefan Dyer podcast. Chao, chao.
Gracias por escuchar el Stefan Dyer podcast. Arrivederci, my people.